This message comes from NPR sponsor, Noom. Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, helps you build new habits for a healthier lifestyle. Check out The Noom Kitchen for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
I'm Jesse Thorne. It's Bullseye. So there is a new show coming to Netflix. One of those shows where the title kind of tells you everything you need to know. It's called Medical Police. Yes, Medical Police. It stars Rob Hubel, who's my guest. Rob is a veteran comic actor. He broke through in 2007 on the MTV sketch show Human Giant alongside Aziz Ansari and Paul Scheer. He's been in many, many other things. Maybe you know him as Les from Transparent. He was on The League. He was on 30 Rock. And maybe his best-known role was on the totally bonkers Adult Swim show Children's Hospital. Children's Hospital was a medical drama parody where pretty much all of the doctors are truly awful at their jobs. He played Dr. Owen Maestro, who was also a bad doctor. Owen used to be a cop in New York City, but left after September 11th. Children's Hospital's last episode aired in 2016, which brings us to Medical Police. The new show picks up where Children's Hospital left off, focusing now on Owen, played by Rob, and his ex-girlfriend, Dr. Lola Spratt, played by Erin Hayes. Here's the premise. Lola and Owen discover a deadly virus, one that could end life as we know it. And together with the government, specifically the Centers for Disease Control, the two of them start traveling the world to see who made the virus and find a cure. They are medical police. Here's one of my favorite scenes from the show. In this clip, Lola just confessed she's having cold feet about the mission. And as you're about to hear, Rob's character is giving her a pep talk.
Hey, now listen to me. Come here. Remember what happened to us in Berlin?
Yeah.
We got shot out of the sky
and
left for dead.
Yeah.
No backup or support. And what'd we do? We kicked and then we continued to kick Florence, Sudan, Denmark, and France. Also Florida, to a lesser degree, Latvia. And now here we are, beautiful.
Shanghai.
Yes, Shanghai, China.
Which is where we are.
Yes.
But isn't it a matter for the police?
We are the police. And we're doctors, which makes us...
cop doctors.
Oh, I was gonna say doctor cops. I like that better.
Look, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but you know what would make me feel better? Guns.
Well, I really thought they were gonna let us bring them on the plane. That's my bad.
Rob Hubel, welcome back to Bullseye. It's nice to see you.
It's, I'm pleasured to be here. Thank you, Jesse.
Congratulations on this very stupid television show.
It is so stupid. And when I hear stuff like that, it makes me laugh so hard. That's my favorite sort of comedy, is just dumb silliness.
I watched recently, I have a TV VCR at my cabin. And I was...
Whoa, there's a lot to unpack right there.
And I was at the thrift store and I found the VHSs of Police Squad.
Yeah.
The television program.
Yeah, wow.
And I watched those recently and I think it might be my favorite kind. I mean, for like, I'm supposed to be a comedy sophisticate. We're on public radio
right now. Of course,
of
course.
I just like 10,000 jokes in a row.
Yeah. And silly jokes too. Yeah. I loved all that stuff like Airplane and, you know, just all those really kind of silly movies and stuff where there were so many jokes going on, like even in the background, there would be something funny happening in the background while the people in the foreground are talking seriously.
I'm like, laughing because I just remembered one when you said that, which is there's this one episode where they're talking about police stuff in the foreground and then in the background, a gurney or like whatever a gurney that doesn't have wheels is called.
A stretcher?
A stretcher comes into the scene, but then as the guy is carrying it, it just crosses the entire frame and keeps going and going and going and going and going like one of those
handkerchiefs that comes out of a magician's pocket.
Yeah. Oh, just the longest stretcher
yeah,
in the world.
It just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah.
And then the man must be 40 feet long. And then finally the back end of the stretcher crosses the.
I love stuff like that, man. I think that stuff's so funny.
What else did you really love when you were a kid?
Well, my mom was like a big comedy fan, and I have two brothers. I'm in the middle, and we all kind of grew up kind of like with my mom's sense of humor, I think, because she just sort of raised us on like old, you know, 70s SNL and like, you know, John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd and when Steve Martin was on there. So I loved all that stuff. And then, yeah, like, you know, later Eddie Murphy. And so all that stuff for sure. And then, you know, I loved like in the 80s, I loved all the like anything Chevy Chase did. I loved, you know, Caddyshack and like my brothers and I used to just quote every line of Fletch. Like I knew every single line of Fletch. You know, I just thought I really wanted to be Chevy Chase. You know, he was just so funny and physical. And like, I love that type of comedy, you know, and I love actors that can do that. They can be like, they can seem really serious, but then just do something really silly and dumb, like fall down the stairs or get hit by a car. Like, I just think that's so cartoony and funny.
I'm not surprised to hear you say that you were a fan of Chevy Chase. And I, too, am a fan of Chevy Chase. I could watch Chevy Chase do Chevy Chase stuff.
Yeah.
Indefinitely.
Old Chevy Chase, yeah.
Yeah.
Classic Chevy Chase.
Well, there's a few things recently he's been quite good
sure,
in.
Sure.
But I love to watch him be an idiot with a completely straight face, and I love to watch him be a monster with a completely straight face.
Yeah.
Both of those are funny to me forever.
I think that, I mean, when we started doing Children's Hospital, and I do think that Cordry and David Wayne and those guys that write all this stuff for us, like, they're such fans of that style of absurd comedy. You know, it's like dumb comedy for smart people. That sort of stuff to me just makes me laugh so hard. And like, just, you know, so when you're shooting it, it just becomes a contest of trying not to laugh, you know, because you're just saying the craziest, silliest stuff, but you're saying it like a doctor. Or in this show, we're saying it like a cop, because in the show, we're doctors and cops now, which makes total sense. And so just to say stuff that's really absurd, but with a totally straight face and like say it with like a sense of urgency and sincerity is so fun to me. Like, it just makes me laugh. Because as soon as they say cut, you just laugh so hard, you know.
But I think specifically one of your gifts, and like if you compare it to Rob Corddry, who created Children's Hospital, the show from which this one is spun off.
Yeah, and I should clarify, I'm not a fan of his
right
at all.
You I know, understand.
Like, we have an ongoing feud.
So both personally and professionally, you're not a fan of his?
Correct. Yes. Personally, I have a restraining order against him.
Oh.
And he's not allowed to even look at me.
A legal restraining order?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if the guy that I did this through has any sort of law degree.
Did you just do it at one of those document places where they like fill out immigration forms for you?
Yeah. It's like a guy in a van behind the Safeway. Mm-hmm. And I filled out a form and I took a picture and then he sped off and I assumed that it got processed.
So did you get that on Craigslist?
I did get it on Craigslist. Yeah. So it's reputable.
Right.
So...
great list.
Yeah, so Corddry can't mess with me.
Rob Corddry's on-screen character is as silly as yours, but I think Rob is kind of a sweet doofus.
Yeah.
Because he's just got he's got a very winning smile, I think. He could sell any doofusy thing with his sweet smile.
Yeah.
You, on this show to some extent, but in a lot of things, you often play a truly bad person.
Sure. Yeah. I'll take that.
And that's what makes me think of Chevy Chase's Chevy Chase's performances, which is like you have played so many Brads, Chads, Devins.
Terry. Devin for sure. Yeah, a lot of Todds, Tad. Just Gavin. Just people that you wouldn't want to be friends with. Yeah, they're usually I pay my rent like playing jerks.
And you're a nice man. I want to stipulate that you're a nice man. I've known you a long time in real life, and you're a sweet guy in real life.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I think you're a sweet guy. Yeah, but I mean, that's why I like playing those people. And again, like, I think just with my brothers, you know, just growing up horsing around the kitchen table, it's just you sort of develop your sort of little toolbox of what you're funny with and what kind of guy you can do, you know. And I was sort of good at doing the jerk guy, you know, just the oblivious guy who's like cocky, a total idiot though, you know, but he thinks he's like super cool or something. So yeah, I just think those guys are, because I don't think I am like that. But when I see people like that out in the world, I'm like, come on, look at yourself. You are such an idiot, you know. And then so I just try to remember what that guy was like and sort of channel that person, you know.
I heard that you and kids from your neighborhood would knock off Saturday Night Live sketches for parents.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I don't know who does your research. That's awesome. Yeah, we would do. There was a girl in our neighborhood who lived down the street from us, and we were they had kids all of that matched our ages. And so we would play with these kids a lot. And their older sister would tape Saturday Night Live and then transcribe it. And then we would put it on like the next day or something, or like a couple days later. So we would basically just do verbatim SNL sketches, which, by the way, the Writers Guild should come to my house and arrest me for doing that. But yeah, we would just do that. You know, I'm sure I was like 8 years old, 10 years old, and we would just do that in our friend's basement for our parents or whatever. And our parents were probably like, where are they getting this stuff? These kids are geniuses. The Coneheads? What? What? Cheeseburger, cheeseburger, cheese. You know, like, where are these routines that they're coming, these characters, you know, and we're just totally ripping off, like, not even parodying, like, just reading back the sketches from the previous night.
What's amazing about it to me is that you are part of a cohort of performers who all became professionals, many very successful professionals, and you did it by pursuing the one comic art that absolutely cannot be a career. So improvisation.
Yes, correct.
Like there's like,
you're not going to make money.
Eight people at the Second City in Chicago.
Yeah.
Who do half improv. There's a few people on a Second City cruise ship somewhere.
Yeah, they make money. Yeah.
There's some people at a thing called Boom Chicago in Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam, yep.
And that's the full complement of full-time professional improvisers. And
those
in
people
the world.
Make money. Yeah. Everybody yeah. else, the hundreds of thousands of other young people doing improv are not getting paid. It's not a lucrative hobby at all. You're not going to make money. But, I mean, the thing that it does give you is you learn to write. Because you're essentially writing on your feet. You're making stuff up with someone else as the audience is watching. And so it's basically writing. And so that sort of muscle for me has paid off in other ways. You know, like now I feel like I can sort of write comedy better or come up with a lot of times. Like, I feel like when I get hired on a show or a movie or something, I'm like, I think why I got cast is to hopefully improvise a little bit, you know? So usually the director
to come and do a Rob Hubel, they want a Rob Hubel type to come and do a Rob Hubel thing.
I hope so. Oh God, I hope so. But, but yeah, so I assume that like, they're going to kind of let me do my thing a little bit and let me kind of improvise some and sort of try to beat the jokes that they already have, you know. So I'll do all the stuff that's scripted for sure, and let's get that. And then hopefully they'll let me do, you know, a run of my own ideas also. But yeah, so I think it's hopefully paid off in other ways. And I kind of got very lucky back in New York doing commercials, like because I was doing all that improv stuff and sketch comedy and for free, as you mentioned. And then somewhere in there, I took a commercial acting class with like Jason Mantzoukas and Jessica St. Clair and like Lennon Parham. We were all in like the same, Brian Husky. So we were on like the same commercial class together. And then from that, I started getting commercials. And so then I was able to like kind of quit my little day jobs, you know, and just make that sweet, sweet commercial bread. I'm talking about the Olive Garden, bro. I guess we can't name people on this show because
you can name.
I'm talking about McDonald's, the Olive Garden, FedEx, Kinko's, What other corporations did I plug?
You were Inconsiderate Cell Phone.
I was.
Guy.
That was one of the first commercials I did. And that was for, I don't think this company is around anymore. There was a cell phone company called Singular, and they had a commercial that used to play before movies across the country. And it was just a reminder to turn your cell phone off. And it was just me being a jerk on my cell phone. It's called Inconsiderate Cell Phone Man. And so it was just a montage of this guy in terrible situations being a jerk on his cell phone.
Hello? Pedro?
It's Inconsiderate Cell Phone Man.
You're at the concert? Thanks for the invite, Glenn. You tell her I'm tan all over.
So inappropriate.
I think I mentioned I was going to interview you on Twitter, and several people brought that up.
Buddy.
That's something that will follow you to your
grave. To my grave. That will follow me to my grave. And then there's a meme of me that will follow me to my grave also, and which is from Children's Hospital, which is me with a very thick mustache, not as aggressive as yours, but in a blue tuxedo throwing glitter. And so that little gif is out on the internet, and that's a little moment from Children's Hospital. But now that gets sent around everywhere, that gif, for like birthdays and, you know, whatever. So I'm like this meme. And I do think that when I ultimately die, like get hit by a bus crossing the street, they'll play that at the Emmy Awards, hopefully, like, oh, in memoriam. And they'll play like my little glitter clip. Which would be awesome.
He was the poor man's Rip Taylor. We knew right. him from a gif.
Again, just ripping off Rip Taylor. Yeah.
We'll finish up with Rob Hubel after the break. Stay with us. It's Bullseye for MaximumFun.org and NPR.
You know how every year you vow that this will be the year you start keeping up with the news more? Well, that resolution just got easier. The NPR Politics podcast is there every day by 5 p.m. to keep you up to date on all the latest political news and explain what matters. Listen daily.
Hey, gang. Jesse here, the founder of Maximum Fun. And with me is Stacey Molsky, who is, among other things, the lady who responds to all of your tweets.
Hi, everyone. I also send you newsletters.
So anyway, something really awesome. You, Max Fun listeners, have given us the chance to do something really cool on behalf of our entire community, and we wanted to tell you about it.
Last summer, following the Max Fun Drive, we put all of the enamel pins on sale to $10 and up members, with proceeds going to the National CASA GAL Association for Children.
Your generous support and enthusiasm raised over $100,000. Our bookkeeper, Steph, would be quick to tell me the exact total is $109,025, to be exact.
Your money will go toward pairing kids who've experienced abuse or neglect with court-appointed advocates or guardian ad litem volunteers.
In other words, kids in tough spots will have somebody in their corner. Knowledgeable grown-ups who are on their team through court dates and life upheavals and confusing situations, whatever.
The money we raise together is going to help a lot of kids.
Whether you bought pins or not, you can help us build on that $109,000 foundation. Make a donation to support National CASA GAL and help some of our nation's most vulnerable children at MaximumFun.org/CASA. That's MaximumFun.org/CASA.
And seriously, thank you. Our community rules.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Rob Hubel. He's an actor who's performed on Transparent, Inhuman Giant, On the League, and more. He's the star of the new show Medical Police, a spinoff of the hit Adult Swim show Children's Hospital. It's a spoof about doctors who carry guns and travel the world fighting disease and crime. It's streaming now on Netflix. You became a father a few years ago.
Yeah.
And your daughter was born very prematurely.
Yes.
What were the circumstances of it?
Ooh, Jesse, we just took a hard turn, buddy.
We did.
We were talking full on comedy.
I know.
No, I can do this. I've talked about this before. The good news is my daughter is super healthy, and she's a maniac, but she's super healthy. She's three, and she's like is she's tall and strong and lean, and she's driving us crazy right now. But yeah, she was born at 26 weeks. And so, you know, a full-term baby is, I believe, 40 weeks. And so this baby came however many weeks that is early, you know, and so came 14 weeks early. She was under 2 pounds when she was born, and she was just a she was, you know, basically a baby bird, you know, like just the smallest little thing. And we don't know exactly why it happened. I mean, they try to kind of go back and figure it out later, but there's not that much that they can tell all the time. And so, you know, my wife basically just started having contractions. We were like furniture shopping over, luckily we were near the hospital. And all of a sudden my wife was like, something's wrong. And like, I was like, what's wrong? And she was like, I think we need to go to the hospital. And so we just sped over to the hospital and they took her up. Initially, we thought like, oh, okay, they can just slow down these contractions and everything. You don't know what's happening. And it's the most terrifying thing because you just don't have any clue, you know. So we thought, well, they'll keep her for a few days and they'll slow down these contractions or whatever. So that turned into a week, which turned into 10 days. And then finally, they just couldn't slow down the contractions anymore. And so it became the sort of thing of like, we think you're going to have the baby tomorrow. And we're like, wait, what? Like, what are you even talking about? You know, a baby born at 26 weeks, that's pretty close to like the cutoff point of viability of whatever that is, survivability. So this baby came 3 months early and then we stayed in the NICU over there for 117 days. Now I've kind of like put it in a box in my mind, so I don't really open that box that much unless I'm on a podcast like no, you know, we at the time we were so freaked out by it that kind of all we could do, I didn't know anyone else that had gone through that experience. And so at the time, all we would do is like look through Instagram for hashtags that matched our daughter. So we would like search 26 weeker or preemie or hashtag NICU or anything like that. And we would find someone that was in the same situation that we were. And then we would just like scroll through their Instagram and look to see how it panned out for them. And so sometimes it worked out. Sometimes they had, you know, really complicated situations, you know, so we just didn't know what was going to happen. And ours was like 2 steps forward, 1 step back. But, you know, we finally got her home after 117 days and she was on oxygen for like 6 months at home. But, you know, now she's doing great. I just always try to be as public about it as I can, because when it's like anything, like whatever you're going through, someone else has already gone through it and someone else is coming up behind you. So, when people reach out to me on like Instagram or Twitter or whatever, I just try to be as open about it as I can, because it was so scary for us. And all you are looking for is like someone to tell you that things are going to be okay.
A family member of mine had 2 very premature children. The first around the time in her pregnancy that your wife had your baby, and because my family member was preeclampsic and in fact nearly died. Oof. In the process of having the baby. And the kids are both doing great now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with the second child, because of her preeclampsia, and the first they had the baby on purpose early to keep my family member safe. And one of the milestones that I remember from those girls growing up, and they're both like preschool age now, was the point at which there was no longer 2 ages being kept.
Yeah.
An age from the day they were born and an age from the day that they were scheduled to be born.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real. Like my daughter was supposed to be born on December the 28th, but she was born on September the 28th. And so, there, you know, that adjusted age, you have to factor that in for the first like few years, because people are dealing with them as though they are one age, but they're really this other age, you know. And then eventually that line becomes blurry and blurry, thankfully. And then it just kind of melts away. And then you're like, oh, they're just this age. But yeah, that is something I remember so vividly, of just like having to explain that to everybody, you know, like, well, she's this age, but she's actually this age, you know, just to doctors and therapists and stuff like that, that you're dealing with. But yeah, I mean, the human body is bananas. I mean, that's an understatement, but like, it's just crazy to watch. Like I picked our daughter up from preschool today, and she like ran over to me, and she's like laughing and talking about some bug that they were all laughing at outside or something. Stupid bugs. And it's just like, it's just weird. Sometimes I just look at her and I'm like, because I know how she started, and it's just, it blows my mind into oblivion to think about it. Like that you can go from something that is so tiny and fragile and like just barely hanging on to life, to just like keep going, keep going, keep going. Like, and then you just keep going and going. And then you become this full on person with like opinions. And, you know, now she's like making jokes about stuff, you know, and like cracking us up. And like when she goes to bed at night, my wife and I are like so tired and like pour a giant glass of wine and like sit on the couch. But like my wife will say like all the time, isn't it weird that she's ours? Like, it's so weird.
I think sometimes when I see a picture of my family members' kids, you know, on Facebook, they live in a different coast than I do, so I don't get to see them in person that much. But I think like if something that my family member told me is, you know, if this kid had been born when I was born, you know, I was born in 1981. It's not like I was born 1,000 years ago, but if this kid had been born the year that I was born, I wouldn't get to look at a healthy 4-year-old.
Yeah. Obviously, I mean, medicine is just, you know, expanding and doing all of this awesome things like at such an exponential rate. But like, yeah, I remember when we brought our daughter home, we were having work done on our house, and the contractor was like, you know, this big burly guy who had a beard that would rival your beard, Jesse. I mean, you guys should have a beard fight. I don't know if people know Jesse's beard right now, but it is aggressive. No, it's awesome. But so this guy was like, oh yeah, I was a preemie. I was born like, you know, 28 weeks or something. I was like, oh really, man? That's so cool. And he's like, yeah, you know, but back when I was born, you know, my mom did, when I came home, they put me in a shoebox and they would put me behind the stove to keep me warm. And I was like, for real? Like, he was like, yeah. Like, he grew up in Minnesota or somewhere. And I was just like, man, like life can just fight. Like, it's just amazing. Like how the humans will just fight. They are fighters, you know?
Do you feel like having gone through something like that has affected the way that you approach the rest of your life?
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, it sort of puts everything in perspective, you know, and whatever it is. Like, I feel like everybody's, you know, they say everybody's going through something. And so I just try to remember that now. I think I'm more aware of that, maybe, that like, oh, I went through this. There are other people that are going through this right now. There are people right now at the hospital that are in NICUs all over the country that are going through this. So if anyone hears this or knows anyone that this might give them some encouragement, like, I love that I have that thing now. Like, my wife and I have that thing. We have that thing that we can be maybe of some little help or encouragement to somebody else. Because before, I didn't have that. Like, I was just a guy doing my thing and making comedy and trying to, you know, be funny in movies and stuff. But I didn't have like a thing that was like, oh, I can actually connect with you about a real life thing, and I might be able to encourage you in some way. So now, like, we have that, you know? And I think if you look at your life like that, or if you look at the, like, those hard things, how can I try to use that as a way to be helpful to the people behind me that are going through that also? And I mean, you know, you have stuff like that too, where whatever it is that is in specific to your family or your kids or your marriage or your something that you went through at work, you know, whatever, that everyone has or will go through something that's like going to give you your thing that you can help the person behind you. You can throw a rope down to them and be like, grab on, because like I can hopefully give you a little bit of hope, you know.
Rob, I really love your show, Medical Police, which is a show in which you play a doctor who becomes a doctor policeman.
Yeah.
And travels the world doctor policing in the style of a television procedural show.
Cop doctor or doctor cop. I can't even remember. Yeah. Medical police. That's it. Medical police.
And I don't want to, I'm just going to play just to, as a sort of like eating a cracker when you're doing a wine tasting or something.
Yeah.
I'm going to play one more stupid clip from your stupid show that I love.
Please.
Before we go, you and your partner, Dr. Lola Spratt, have apprehended someone that you thought was a terrorist and shot and killed him. And then they figure out, or they shot him. I think they shoot him in the arm.
Yeah, we shot him in the arm.
He's not quite dead.
Yeah, he's not dead. He's hanging on.
And then you realize that there's this whole other explanation for all the clues that you thought were for sure the reason that he was definitely the guy.
What a terrible day this is turned out to be.
I feel that we may have really messed up on that one.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Haseem? yeah, this is kind of funny.
This is very funny.
You know, we actually thought you were a terrorist.
Because I'm Muslim.
No.
What?
No.
No.
Oh my God.
No.
No. If anything, in spite of that fact. No. Trust us, we have had precisely that conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we're also not suggesting that there is a simple one-size-fits-all solution for these problems.
No. This is the kind of dialogue we should all be having.
Thank you.
And that's exactly what we've been saying.
It's
a give and take.
It's a give and take.
It's a everybody.
It's a give and take for all of us.
Assistant Hilo.
Hi. Thank God. Listen, so we shot him, but we also saved his life. So it kind of evens out.
That's what cop doctors do. You can shoot someone and then you just patch them up. Move on down the road.
Rob, thank you for your candor talking with me today. And thanks for this great show that its high-spirited stupidity will bring great warmth and comfort to many people's lives.
Thanks, Jesse. I'm a big fan and I love doing the show. Thanks for having me.
Rob Hubel, Medical Police, is so funny. I cannot tell you how funny Medical Police is. It is full of laughs. I can't wait for you to see it. It's streaming right now on Netflix. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is produced at MaximumFun.org World Headquarters, overlooking MacArthur Park here in beautiful Los Angeles, California, where there was a film shoot in the park. Not an uncommon occurrence. A lot of great movies have been shot in MacArthur Park. The subject of this one, two guys wearing matching gray tracksuits, both wearing bright red shoes with identically styled beards and man buns. Then later on, they changed into leopard print. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our producer is Kevin Ferguson. Jesus Ambrosio is our associate producer. We get help from Casey O'Brien, I just saw with a giant electric piano in the office. Our production fellows are Jordan Cowling and Melissa Duenas. Our interstitial music is by Dan Wally, also known as DJW, though who knows, maybe Casey's gunning for his job. Our theme song is by The Go Team. Our thanks to them and their label Memphis Industries for letting us use it. And one last thing, we have done almost 2 decades of Bullseye and the show that preceded it, The Sound of Young America. We had Human Giant on when Human Giant was new, Rob Hubel's MTV sketch group. You can find that interview on our Bullseye page at MaximumFun.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Just search for Bullseye with Jesse Thorne.
Keep up with the show there, and I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Vuori, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to Vuori.com/NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
This election season, you can expect to hear a lot of news, some of it meaningful, much of it not. Give the Up First podcast 15 minutes, sometimes a little less, and we'll help you sort it out, what's going on around the world and at home. 3 stories, 15 minutes, Up First, every day. Listen every morning, wherever you get your podcasts.